The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another spring training edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball. Not a ton of major developments to go over, but we got some smaller stuff. We might kick around a few scenarios, so should be a fun show. I am Terry Cushman, joined tonight by Evan Kay, Jason Kelly. How are you guys?
Be doing a lot better if I could actually see any of these Red Sox games on TV when they're playing. But we had that awful MLB.com free game of the day the other day, and then today's game against the Rays, nothing. Just, you know, more reruns of Billy and Jenny. It's like, come on, can Nesson like pony up a little bit and just get a few more of these games on here? It's ridiculous. But oh well, it's getting warmer up here. We're getting more into baseball mood. So all in all, I'm pretty good.
I'm doing well, too. I kind of agree with Jason. Like, the camera's already there. Let's just pay the extra whatever amount of money to air a spring training game. I don't even care if it's, like, Division II college style, just behind home plate. Give me something. I will say Castig coming back on for a few innings kind of saved it. But you know what? If we're going to lose 8-2, that's a good one to miss. So,
I think one of the tragedies of this winter, I'm not a Dave O'Brien guy. And, oh, they had a perfect opportunity to move on. Maybe go with Mike Monaco or get a big fish from outside the market. But now that we're going to be good again, theoretically, I think we're stuck with O'Brien for a while.
Certainly seems that way. Yeah, I know that if Nesson can save a buck, they're going to save a buck because – even with the Bruins, the hockey team, they lost their longtime announcer, and all they did was they promoted the radio guy to do the TV. And they just found a new radio guy because that's a cheaper route. So any idea of Dave O'Brien getting moved to radio or them paying someone else to come in, probably not going to happen. I feel like he's just got an ironclad contract, and they're just going to stick with him. So sucks for us, but it is what it is.
Speaking of Nesson, I mean, one guy who must have some information about Nesson, Charlie Moore. What are we doing? Like, can we get Charlie Moore off the TV? He's been on, I mean, what is it, 20 years? What does he do? Does he fish? I don't even watch it anymore. I feel like all he does is bass fish and, like, eat. Like, how is he on the TV still?
He's the mad fisherman. Yeah, just can't get rid of him. Yeah, he's been on the air for, like, 30-plus years and just, I don't get it either. But I don't know. He must have something over the guys at Nesson.
Lou Maloney, I know he chirps us from time to time, but I'm pro Lou and on TV anyway. And so he's going to get a lot of the games. Like, he essentially, I think, now has the Jerry Remy spot. He's going to do, what, 100 to 120 games? So that's good. I wasn't a big Euclid guy. I just thought he was very vanilla, kind of watered down. I mean, he wasn't terrible, but I didn't feel invigorated when I saw him in the booth. And I don't know if Papelmon's going to be in there. I thought it was intriguing that they tried it. It was obviously rough, you know, but not necessarily even in a bad way, but you knew he was a fish out of water in that booth. And yeah. And interestingly, Don Orsillo got an extension with whatever network covers the Padres. And I don't know if it was a Boston guy that said it, a Boston media person. But whoever it was said something that really resonated with me. He said there was no way the Padres were going to let him walk because, unlike the Red Sox, they knew what they had. And like, ouch, that was a dig. And it was absolutely true. So yeah, anyway, you know, we're stuck with O'Brien, but, you know, we might have our first winning season since 2021. So you know, we didn't cover it in the last show. The Devers Bregman defensive alignment seems to be far from resolved. Devers did say, you know, he kind of smooth things over a little bit, saying he just wants to win, but also, you know, was quoted in the same article saying he still sees himself as a third baseman. So here's a tweet from Ian Brown that caught a Cora quote, apparently, and said that the Red Sox, are shooting for Devers to play his first game a week from Wednesday at third base, but reiterated no decisions have been made. Said Bregman will play second base during spring training. So that's interesting. Now we're kind of, it seems like we're pivoting back to what we thought would happen throughout the winter. You know, there was more talk of Bregman playing second. You guys buying it? Well, why don't we start with Evan?
You know, it's super, super early, so I don't want to jump to any conclusion here. But I will say, out of the three big prospects, Christian Campbell looks the most uncomfortable. I think he's pressing a little bit. Not to say he can't find it. He might go 3-for-3 with three bombs tomorrow. I have no idea. But just as a fact, Marcelo looks comfortable. Roman looks comfortable. Christian hasn't done anything that's really wowed me yet. So with Devers coming back, I wouldn't be surprised to see Bregman slot over there. But there has been some, you know, rumbling on Twitter and whatnot, talking about our second base depth and whatnot. And David Hamilton has really impressed me. And, you know, Vaughn hasn't done much. I'm a Vaughn guy. But yeah, Bregman seems like our best option overall. But I wouldn't be surprised if David Hamilton gets a little bit more run over there. But yeah, I don't know. I'm looking forward to seeing how it pans out.
I think the Campbell situation is a big part of this because, like Evan said, he's the one who you kind of look at and you say, okay, he accelerated through the system so fast, but it was because of his bat. His defense, you know, we still don't know yet because he's played all over the place, especially coming up through the system. He played the outfield, he played shortstop a little bit, and he did play a little bit of second base, but he's not a true second baseman by nature. So, and there's even reports of like, the infield coaches are still working with him on just the basic mechanics of turning a double play and playing second base every day. So if he's that far behind defensively, I just don't see him winning the job out of spring training. Even if his bat is electric, even if he hits over 400 during spring training and looks really good at the plate, it's, you can't sacrifice that much defense for a kid who hasn't learned that position yet, especially when you do have the platoon option of Grissom, Hamilton to spare, Bregman at second base while Devers mans third. And it's kind of a best of both worlds for the Red Sox at the moment because Campbell gets to start the year in AAA. He gets to really, you know, you name him the second baseman down there. He gets to really hone his craft at second base and he gets to hone his craft at the plate. Meanwhile, Devers is happy because he gets to start the year at third like he wants. And Bregman's at second base, and I think Bregman would be okay with that. So at least in the interim, or at least to start the year, I think that's how it's going to go. I think Campbell's going to start the year in AAA. Devers will be at third, Bregman at second, and then you'll have Grissom and Hamilton off the bench to spare both of those two guys. Now, if Campbell is, you know, absolutely smashing the bat by mid-May, then you could see a change, especially if Devers picks up, you know, 5 or 6 errors in that time, then the Red Sox will feel justified in saying, look, we were waiting on Campbell all along. We told Rafi it was his position until we need to make the team better. We believe this will make the team better. They call up Campbell. They eventually make the move that we all want them to make, which is Devers, you're going to DH. Yoshida, you're out of here. We don't care where you're going. And Bregman's going to third. So I think at the moment, because Campbell's just not quite ready, and it's so early in spring, we don't know yet. He might, you know, the next 2 weeks, he might look like he's a big leaguer. We don't know that. But at least at the moment, I agree with Evan. He just doesn't look ready yet. So I think it's going to give the Red Sox the perfect out to make Devers happy, put him at third, start Campbell in AAA, and then everyone kind of goes along with it, at least for the first couple months of the season, And then we'll see what Campbell does in AAA during that time. But yeah, it feels like Devers is going to get his way just because I don't think Campbell's fully ready yet.
And I think Bregman, I don't think Bregman even cares. He's just happy to be here. He knows he's going to be in the lineup every day. He's going to have a big role. I don't think he's going to die on a hill on how he's utilized. So with Campbell, the interesting thing now is an extension still imminent? Because I have a feeling, I don't know what it is, but I feel like he's going to be a bigger star than Anthony. And maybe they're both going to be perennial all-stars regardless, but I just feel like he's going to play so much better at Fenway being a righty, and I don't know what it is. So I hope they get that done. He could still start the year, you know, in Worcester regardless, but I hope this doesn't mess with that. And Anthony, I'm a little skeptical because when they asked him if he was open to signing an extension, he basically said, well, I would at least have a conversation. So he might just want to get to free agency as fast as he can without, you know, signing anything early. So we'll see. But that's all interesting. And I don't know, can we like definitively rule out that Campbell might not just go to the outfield?
Well, no, I think that he is versatile. I mean, granted, I don't know if he's very strong in any position. So I guess if you can't play any position well, then you can play every position okay. But I actually have been pitching this, I guess, interesting but probably unlikely scenario on my little videos I do on Twitter. If Marcelo Meyer keeps raking, is there a chance he plays shortstop opening day and Trevor Story bumps over to second, Bregman plays third, Devers DHs? Because Marcelo looks more comfortable. The defense looks very solid. The bat looks, you know, more than playable, you know, especially if it's 6-7 hole. Trevor Story going to two preserves his health. And not to mention, also probably an overreact, but his arm has not looked great in spring training. He's skipping a lot of throws. He's not setting his feet. I don't think it's the worst case scenario because you still get your right-handed bat at second base. Devers moves to DH. Bregman can play third base, his natural gold glove position. And then, what, you know, at least one of the big three is up. Christian Campbell has time to develop. Now, granted, Marcelo Meyer has been injured, so that's been kind of the hindrance on his progression, right? But he's still been in the clubhouse in the major leagues a lot longer than Christian Campbell. He's been with the Red Sox guys. He's developed with their player development team and their coaches and whatnot. He just seems so much more comfortable and smooth and major league ready to me, just by the way he carries himself on the field at this very moment, where I just don't think that's impossible. Is it likely? No, but I would not be shocked to see Trevor Story bump over to two for at least a portion of spring training.
I had thought of that, but more for the long term, you know, because if Meyer comes up, I mean, he's not going to play any place other than short. So that's kind of where I was thinking that. But I would say it's a long shot out of camp and into opening day, but it would be intriguing if it did happen.
Yeah, theoretically, Mayer should be the most ready of those three guys. He's been at it the longest. So, and he's kind of, you know, he's been that number one prospect longer than those two guys have. So he should be more ready. It's just he's missed so much time with the injuries that, you know, that does kind of hinder him. I would prefer to see him stay healthy and play a couple of really good months in AAA before doing that option. And I agree with you about Story. His arm, I mean, we knew this about his arm, that it's not really a shortstop arm anymore. Not at this stage of his career. He probably is better suited to play second base. And that short stint when he did, he was really good there. So I'm not opposed to moving him to second at all. I just think Mayer's health issues and the inconsistency there, I want to see him put some more time in before making that decision. I mean, ultimately, I'm probably one of the few Red Sox fans that's going to say this. I want all three of those guys in AAA to start the year. I don't want any of them with a big league club. I don't want to rush anything. You know, I don't want an Andrew Benintendi situation with someone like Roman Anthony, where you rush him to the majors, he has one good year, and then he gets all screwed up. I'd rather these guys naturally kind of bang down the door, and then you can address it then, because you already have a good team right now. You don't need to force any of those three kids onto the roster. And I know we kind of, you know, roasted Tristan Casas for what he said when, you know, he said they should all start in AAA. That was more just because I think he's trying to protect his own ass. But that being said, he's not entirely wrong that the roster is good. With Bregman here now, you're okay. You've got depth on the infield as well. You've got depth in the outfield too. So I'm not trying to force it. And unless one of them absolutely blows you away, don't just let them all start in AAA. You know, have the roster shake out the way it's going to. And then we'll see. In terms of, you know, a guy like Christian Campbell, you know, could he play the outfield full time? Maybe. I don't know. I don't know what he profiles as. Is he Mookie Betts, or is he more of like a Rob Refsnyder, where Refsnyder early in his career could play everywhere? Now he's just an outfielder. I don't know. You know, we don't know what he is defensively. So I'm not looking to rush any of those decisions just yet. I would rather just keep the roster you have now. You still have the albatross in Yoshida that's kind of gumming up the works. So you're going to have to figure that out eventually. And then, you know, if Campbell's hitting 420 by, you know, June 1st, then okay, then you can start to make some decisions. But for now, don't force anything. Just let these kids develop on their own.
Back in the day, you know, in the glory days when Epstein was the GM, he had a very strict policy when it came to prospects. They were all going to have 400 at-bats at every level throughout the minors. And maybe now that he's back, maybe he's putting that into Breslow's ear. I mean, it's a good policy to have. And like you said, Jason, there's no reason to rush. You have more than enough talent at the major league level to just start the year. Eventually, someone will probably get hurt anyway. I mean, hopefully not, but, you know, that's just typically how it goes. And that'll pave the way for one of them to get called up. And, you know, we'll see how it goes from there. But another thing, see, I mentioned Campbell going to the outfield. The more I think about it, the more vulnerable Seydon Rafaela looks to me long term in terms of being an everyday outfielder. You know, some of you have mentioned, well, he could just end up being the super utility guy. I don't know how many games a year that ends up being, you know, 80 to 100 at least. But it's just one thing in the back of my mind, because Anthony is obviously, once he gets called up, which will almost certainly be this year, he's going to be out there every day. There's no change in that. Jaron Duran, for as long as he's on the roster, will be out there every day. So, I mean, if you got this massive logjam, I just don't know. It's just tough. I mean, Rafaela so far isn't a plus bat. He's better than Bradley is, you know, at this stage of his career. Bradley went up and down, you know, back when it was the Pawtucket Red Sox, and never really stayed up for a full season until like 2016, I think, and which was the best season of his career. He hit like 27 home runs that year. He had that epic streak of almost 30 games. That was so fun. I mentioned that from time to time, but I guess these are good problems to have, but we'll see how they turn out. I want to throw a pitching scenario by you. It's a hypothetical. I don't know if I even love it, but I would file it in the open-minded category. Let's say the Crochet thing just doesn't happen. Maybe he wants the Gerrit Cole contract right away. Maybe the Red Sox are lower than they really should be, and it just doesn't happen. But let's say Walker Buehler is like pitching to close to a top of the rotation guy. Do you pivot in July and try to get him done?
I don't think it's a pivot. I think it's in addition to. So if we're not going to sign Crochet long-term, which I still think they're going to, but for this scenario, Let's say they don't. Crochet says, I hate it here. I'm leaving in 2 years, whatever. If you go ahead and sign Walker Buehler to 5 years, $130 million, whatever it might take. I don't, that's just a random number. I think you still have to go get an ace this offseason, okay? Because Tanner Houck, he's not an ace. He's a very good pitcher. He's a great number three, a good number two, and a piss-poor ace on a World Series contending club. So if you're not going to sign Crochet and you know that, go get Dylan Cease, okay? Go trade for George Kirby. Go trade for Michael King. Go do something of that nature rather than just go, oh, well, he's already here, so let's sign Walker Buehler long-term. I'm cool with it, but that should be in addition to. What about you, Jason?
Yeah, I think I agree. If you're signing Walker Buehler, if you're pivoting to him, as you said, in July, you're signing him to be your number two or even your number three in the best-case scenario, right? If you can't get Crochet done, then yes, you have to pivot to someone else. Walker Buehler can't be your ace contract. And Tanner Houck is not an ace. Brian Bayo, I don't think he's going to develop into an ace. At least not at this point. He hasn't shown that. And you have no other pitcher in your system that looks like he's going to turn into an ace anytime soon. So yeah, at that point I would pivot to someone like maybe Dylan Cease. I'd prefer to get someone a little younger than that. I would prefer to pivot to like a George Kirby. If Seattle once again does what they usually do where, you know, they contend all season and then fall apart in September, because that's what they always do. Maybe then you call up their GM and say, hey, idiot, you want to finally make this Kirby trade happen? So maybe you do something like that. But yeah, if you can't get Crochet done, I have no problem. If Buehler is absolutely dealing and you feel good about his health, I have no problem signing pitchers to contract extensions. I know that it's a scary thought after the Chris Sale one because that was just such a complete disaster. But at some point, you can't keep giving out just one-year deals to pitchers. You have to sign someone here for a long-term contract, and you have to be able to show, you know, all the potential free agents out there and other pitchers and other organizations that we're willing to give you a long-term deal to be, you know, at the front end of the rotation of the Boston Red Sox. So I'd have no problem with it. If Buehler's absolutely dealing, sure, give him a 4-5 year deal, you know, lock him up, but then go get another piece. If Crochet's not going to happen and that's just, you know, for whatever reason, then you do still need to go get someone else. And it's going to be tough because I think even, you know, Crochet at his best, even a guy like George Kirby is kind of a step down from Crochet. It's not much of a step down, but it is a little bit. Crochet is like he's Cy Young number one when he's on. So it's going to be tough to pivot from that, but you will have to do it if he's just not going to sign. So no problem. You want to sign Walker Buehler on, you know, July 1st or July 30th, whatever, if he's absolutely dealing, no problem. But make sure you go get someone else so that your rotation is so strong at the front.
So I think, and perhaps I'm jumping the gun, but I'm growingly more confident that Buehler will get back to his old form or close to it. And I think the fact that he has a fully rebuilt elbow is very attractive to this front office. And I would expect him to get around what Blake Snell got. 5 or 6 years, upwards of 200. I can't see the Red Sox giving out two contracts like that. I hope I'm wrong. I would love to be wrong about that, but it just seems far.
You think Walker Buehler is going to get $200 million?
He's only 31 this year. So yeah, I think he would get a 6 year deal.
I can't buy that, Terry. I think he would get somewhere in the 150 range, maybe 5-6 years, just because of one, this is his second Tommy John. That usually doesn't bode well. So granted, in this scenario, he has a bounce back year, fine, but the longevity of that is unknown. Two, he's on the north or south side, whatever, the wrong side of 30. And then three, his last three seasons, two or three seasons, are either a wash or not good. I think we're riding the World Series high where he made the last out and closed the game, and that's awesome. But like Chris Sale also did that after an injury riddled, not a great season. And then we gave him 5 years and look what happened. Right. So I'm all for keeping him. I just don't think he's going to ask for that kind of money. If he's going to ask for $200 million, I'm out.
He actually doesn't turn 31 until next July, so he's 30 years old. Just going through his last couple of seasons. I mean, well, actually, so his last full one was what? 2021. Yeah, so his last full season, a 2.47 ERA. It looks like he had the Tommy John at some point in 22. Not a good season. And then, you know, this season, not great, but it got better going down the stretch. This scenario only happens if he's lights out coming into the All-Star break. That's when they would pounce. And we're a long ways from there, but I don't know. I just, if they're lacking the confidence that they're going to get it done with Crochet, I could see it happening. And then next year also, I mean, you still have Houck for a few more years. You still have Bayo. Sandoval is on the books for next year. I doubt they're going to just trade him. I mean, $12 million for a number three or number four guy. Alex Cobb just got 15. So, you know. And then Giolito, who knows? He does have a vesting option, but they could move him to, you know, if I'm wrong, and they do sign Crochet in addition to Buehler, then you could move Giolito. But I don't know. I just feel like it's – I feel like there's going to be a lot of propaganda behind keeping Walker Buehler here if he's as good as I think he's going to be.
And that propaganda will grow if by July it's, you know, Crochet extension talks still aren't going anywhere, because that's right now it's not a big issue, but pretty soon that's going to, you know, the clock's going to keep ticking, and eventually you're going to be sitting there saying, why isn't Crochet signed? You know, especially if he's, you know, 12-2 by the deadline with a sub three ERA and he's, you know, leads the American League in strikeouts, and we're sitting there going, why isn't he signing? This is starting to get worrying. Like, does he want to stay here, or does he want to maximize his payday? And he knows the Red Sox won't give that to him. That'll start to be concerning. So the Buehler propaganda will grow if the fan base starts to believe that Crochet just, he wants a paycheck and he doesn't really want to be here.
And if you don't get the Crochet deal done and he's tearing it up like we all expect, you're just going to have to pay the price. Whatever it is, you're essentially going to have to give him his free agent deal next winter.
Yeah, and, you know, I've said this before, and I'm going to say it again. We are the Red Sox. Well, not we, the team. The Red Sox, you play the Yankees, you play the Rangers, you play the Astros, you play all these, you know, and even the Athletics can hit now, and they always really can. You need an ace. So if they don't want to pony up, which I'm going to preface this and say, I think they're going to sign Crochet before opening day. But if you don't want to pony up and pay a 25-year-old left-hander throwing 100 miles an hour with like an over 10 K per nine and whatever, then who are you going to pay? You need an ace. You can't just have nobody and just keep filtering through Sandoval and Giolito and Cutter Crawford and Tanner Houck. Those are all fine players. I like them. I root for them. Great. You need an ace. Every World Series team had or has an ace. If you're going to let Garrett Crochet walk out the door, then I'm out on this front office. And, you know, I'm probably the most optimistic one on this podcast, I would say, especially regarding the front office. That would be it for me if they don't extend this pitcher. I don't care if he goes out and posts a 4 ERA this year. You need to extend him. He's shown his potential. If he has a down year, that doesn't turn me off from him. He's 26 years old next year. Give this guy money. Pay him. Extend him. I like Dylan Cease. I want Dylan Cease in addition to. I like Logan Webb. I want Logan Webb in addition to. I like Sandy. I want Sandy in addition to. We're the Boston Red Sox. We are not the Marlins. We are not the Mariners. We're not these mid-market teams who can just filter through players and just finish with 86 wins every year and sneak into the playoffs and everyone goes, la-di-da, this is great. Shoot for 100 wins. That should be your goal every year. Go get another pitcher. Extend the guys that you have here. Do your thing. I don't think it's if or, you know, I don't think it's one or the other with Crochet or Buehler or Cease or whoever.
I'm not a Cease guy. I mean, if he was a 2-year rental and you didn't have to give up a ton, you didn't have to give
up. How about Zach Gallen?
Probably a little more open-minded there. But he is a Boris guy, so there's that complication. But Cease just has a ton of miles on that arm is what is what gets me. I just feel like you give him a 6 or 7 year deal, I think in year 2 or 3, you're probably going to lose him to Tommy John. So, but at the same time, I mean, I'm not going to, you know.
I think this team just lacks, like, we have a lot of talent and a lot of if and a lot of potential. We just lack, like, innings eaters. Like, and like, you know, I as much as I don't like the Phillies layout long term, like, you need a Zach Wheeler, or obviously he's an elite version, but like an Aaron Nola, like a guy that's going to pitch to a 3-9 and give you 200 innings every year without a doubt. We don't have that. Tanner Houck might give you 180. You know, this is going to be his second full year as a starter. Garrett Crochet has never pitched more than 160. Cutter Crawford was a swing man until last year. Bayo doesn't really rack up innings like that. Who's our surefire 190 to 200 inning guy? I don't think we have one. So I don't know. Does that mean you go get Sandy? I don't know. I know the Marlins need to add money like the Athletics did at the beginning of the season. Sandy's just so affordable. I don't really know how that would work out. I don't know if he's available right now. They're probably waiting until midseason at the earliest. I just need like an innings eater, whether he's elite or just mid-tier. I need someone who's going to go out and shove every fifth day.
Yeah, I mean, you go back to that 04 season, they all made, what, 30 starts, 200 innings apiece. So we'll see. All right, just a few rapid-fire updates. Brian Bayo will throw a bullpen session this Friday. That's a very positive development. I think he's had some shoulder issues. And I can't remember if I mentioned it on the last show, but every winter, he works out with Pedro. You get some cool Instagram videos, and then he shows up to camp hurt. not majorly, but enough to where you're sort of questioning whether he's going to be ready for that first turn through. So, but I would say if he's going to throw a bullpen, that means he's throwing everything and should be ready, most likely. Another positive development, Liam Hendricks hit 96 on the gun today. Very good sign. 37-year-old pitcher. Hasn't pitched in a while. Nick Diamond on the last show kind of talked me into him being the closer. I mean, he's got the personality for it. He's got the pedigree. It's just, can he hold up? And if he essentially demonstrates that throughout spring training, I expect him most likely to win the job, even though I've been pretty pro Whitlock. And then the last one, and then you guys can weigh in on any one of these. Not such a great outing today by Aroldis Chapman. 23 pitches, only 11 strikes, walked a couple. It's early, but that seems to be pretty on brand for Chapman the last couple of years. But you guys want to weigh in on any of that?
Yeah, I kind of want to go back to the closer talk. I'm all for Hendricks or whoever wins the job. I'm not really particular for the 2025 season. But I think going forward, I am pro Luis Guerrero. And I don't want to write off my guy Whitlock. I've been Whitlock the closer truther for a minute now. But, you know, we haven't seen him, so I'm going to use my recency bias here. Luis Guerrero, I don't know if you've watched Terry. He has that limp going. You know, he's like one leg is shorter than the other. He has something going on with that. He throws 100, like throwing a cool walk-up song with the limp. I don't know. I like a closer with attitude. I like the, maybe not to the Edwin Diaz extent, you know, with the whole stadium, you know, dancing to the song. But I love like energy from a closer. You know what I mean? Like I get David Robertson can come in and you know, give you 25 saves and it's great. And that's boring. You know, give me someone who throws 100. Give me someone who has a limp. I don't know, dreads, a cool walk-in song. I don't know. Like our closer this year is probably going to be Australian. That's sick. I don't know. I need something like that. Give me something.
What's the walk-up song?
Oh man, I don't know. I don't speak the Espanol, so probably something of that nature. Yeah, gotcha. Yeah. I don't know what it is, but I'm sure you could find something.
Mine would be the Top Gun theme song with the guitar going. That's mine.
Yeah, Danger Zone. There you go. Yeah.
No, it's not that one. It's a different one.
No,
but I did a solo. I think it was one of my Sam Kennedy rants. I opened up the show with it. And so it was fun. I like that one. But I thought you were going to say Slayton. Like, he's a popular, you know, trendy name. But
yeah.
Jason, any thoughts?
I'm all for anyone being the Red Sox closer that's not named Aroldis Chapman. Because, man, he's already in midseason form, right? Just can't throw strikes, two walks. But he hit 101 on the gun, so that's fun. Yeah, this is going to be the Chapman experience. He's going to walk the ballpark, but he's going to hit 102 every now and then and strike someone out, and just the crowd's going to go nuts. I'm already just so dreading that. I could be talked into Liam Hendricks. I mean, Evan, to your point, like, he'd be a cool closer. Like, already today, his first spring outing, he punches a guy out, pumps his fist, and throws an F-bomb out there. Like, in the, third, fourth game of spring training? And he even admitted after the game, he's like, yeah, that might have been a bit much in a spring training game, but I was just so fired up. It's like, all right, that's cool. Like, you know, cool Australian guy. Like, you know, he's been through a lot. Like, his story is great. You know, hits 96 on the gun and punches people out and throws F-bombs. That's like Papelbon all over again. Just, it's Australian.
I was going to say, the closest thing to Pap that we've had in, you know, right since Papelbon left.
Yeah,
that would be sweet. I'm looking forward to it. Chapman is a lot more like Kenley than we want to admit, in the sense where there's never just like a clean inning or save. Like, Kenley would get the first out and then walk two guys and give him a single, and the ball would come into home, and then it'd be bases loaded, and then he'd strike two guys out, and you're like, wow, okay, didn't need all that, Kenley. You know what I mean? It's the Twins in May. Like, let's just get it over with. So I think, you know, a lot of seventh, eighth, potentially ninth innings with Chapman are going to be to that same degree. Obviously, I trust Kenley more, though, so that sucks.
Yeah, Chapman's going to be a roller coaster all year, and it's why I still hate the signing to this day. But yeah, I like the Luis Guerrero idea. If he can stay healthy and he looks like the real deal, I have no problem giving him a shot. But right now, I'm kind of on the Hendricks train. Like, if he stays healthy and he looks good all spring, I'd say give him the role to start, and then just, you know, see what happens. You know, if he starts to falter, maybe then Slayton gets an opportunity. If Whitlock is still healthy and, you know, his arm hasn't fallen off yet, then maybe he gets an opportunity. But for right now, I like the Hendricks idea.
That's the one position or role on a team where personality matters, and especially in Boston. And like you guys alluded to, you know, Papelbon went out there and was a complete psychopath. Like, you could just see it, this possessed look on his face. And, you know, Hendricks kind of fits that mold. Admittedly, I'm not that familiar with Guerrero. He's a righty, I assume, right-handed pitcher?
Yeah, righty.
Okay.
Yeah, righty. He has a sweeper, and then it plays off his fastball. I think he has a tertiary pitch, but he's mostly a fastball sweeper guy. Speaking of crazy closers, I'm really, like, I'm happy for the person. I like watching Mad Max pitch. When I heard that Scherzer wanted to be a closer, if he had to be, I was rooting for that, man. Not necessarily here, but somewhere. I would love to see Scherzer as a closer.
Yeah, you know, it's a better game with him in it. And, you know, he's right around 40 or maybe even 41 at this point. And that's a cool role. And, you know, he just, if you're still in the game at that age, you love baseball. And you just want to play it for as long as you can. And I think Scherzer's being very realistic on what he can and can't do. And I would love to see Scherzer be a borderline stud closer. And, you know, we'll see what happens. But all right, we'll wrap on that. The next show, we're going to bash the Yankees for a little bit and talk about their worst contracts of the last decade. So kind of getting into the creative part of the winter where, you know, most of the signings are done. I don't think any of us expect anything major to happen. I would say there's still a 5% chance maybe a Guerrero deal gets done, Vladimir, but very minimal. So we will see about that. But everyone have a good rest of your Thursday. Take care.